I'm a stress and coping expert, so I'm a psychophysiologist, if we want to get really specific. As far as when we're trying to get athletes to shift that mindset from I'm a healthy athlete to I'm an injured athlete, again, it's that control switch of, you know, the expert players. So essentially say the thing that I can control is to shift my focus from my job being to perform on the pitch to performing in PT. My job now is 100% as an athlete and a member of my team is to focus on getting better. And when they really take their focus off of I'm missing out on the pitch, which they can't control, to I can control putting 100% of my effort and focus into my recovery, not only is the journey going to be quicker and easier, they're more likely to come back and then reintegrate better with their team.
This is Maestro on the Mic,
a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it poppin'.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me a very special guest all the way from Germany. It's like 11:30 p.m., some nonsense there. She was awesome enough to schedule this, take time out of her incredibly busy schedule to hop on here. And it's pretty much been a glaring omission, I think, on my part that I haven't brought someone like her, more specifically her, on yet. Right, I'm going to let her do the full intro, but suffice to say that she is a sport psychology expert. I can't believe I haven't brought her on before. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Julia Ayer. Thanks for coming on, homie.
What's up, Maestro?
Finally. And again, thank you for doing this. It's like extra super late. You said Brene has some stuff going on this week. Beyonce got some stuff going on this week. And yet here you are, making time for my podcast.
I mean, hello. Do you see how much stuff is on Netflix right now? I mean, how dare they drop that and the Homecoming album this week and the Where is the Formation World Tour DVD shirts this week? I could be spending so much money and wasting so much time right now, but I'm way more thrilled to be here with you at 10 minutes to midnight in Germany.
I'm like, damn, this time difference, like... Thank you. You know, for the record, this is because she is just basically so on it. So I have you guys listening, I have an online scheduler that does when I'm going to schedule people for the podcast, and it offers specific times and it, you know, does an automatic conversion of the times. But because I line up a few at a time, there wasn't an open spot in an earlier time or a better time for like quite a few weeks. And so homie was like, you know what? I'm not even going to wait. We're just going to schedule this for 11 p.m. I'm like, damn, there's commitment. I love it. Like,
I've been hyped about it ever since we talked about it and you sent me the link and I got on there and it was like, well, in 6 weeks, I guess we could do it at 10 p.m. But what's really the difference? Let me just catch dead ass at 11:30.
I love it. So, Julia, why don't you tell the folks who you are, what your background is? Give it all.
Hi, I'm Julia. I'm German and American. So you might hear this, that, and the other coming out. I can't be responsible for what happens after 9 p.m. I am a strength and conditioning coach, primarily in soccer, but worked in a really wide range of sports, and a sports psychology expert. Why not a sports psychologist? Because I'm procrastinating on finishing my master thesis. As soon as I do, I'll be a sports psychologist. As soon as I publish, I'll be a sports psychologist, but you know. Watching Homecoming an eighth time is more important.
Exactly. There you go.
And I work and study in Cologne, Germany at the...
That accent.
You want to say the...
No, was, good. It's all for you.
At the German Sport University of Cologne, or the Deutsche Sporthochschule in Köln, Germany. That's what it sounds like.
There it is. What does it mean to be a sports psychology expert, though? Like, tease that out. Like, I love that you actually just differentiated, like, not a sports psychologist yet, just because of the schooling you haven't quite finished. But what does it actually mean? What is a sports psychology expert?
Okay, so can I throw it back to you? What do you know about sports psychology? What if you look in popular media and what people say and what Instagram says besides my channel? Because What do people say about sports psychology? Like, what's the, how do we encapsulate?
I have no idea. I probably even couldn't. Like, you know, I think the first, my first exposure to a sports psychologist was when I was in college, but it wasn't even me receiving therapy or going to therapy. It was a friend of mine. Mm. And actually she's a professional soccer player now. And that was actually probably one of the first times that I started respecting psychology. I'm not going to lie. Like I'm always very skeptical of things. And then she started talking about what she was, you know, her sessions. And I was like, I see the benefit of this. But that was like probably my first exposure. And since then, I can't say that I've seen it, or that I've paid attention to it as a mainstream thing. And that's why I was like, this is a freaking glaring omission that I have on this podcast, because we talk so much about mindset and we talk so much about these intangibles and the other side of things, you know, the brain-body connection, things like that. But I've never brought someone on to actually, this is what they do. So I don't know.
Yeah, so we have, I often fight against the myths, I guess you could say, that sports psychology is just about motivation. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I give a really great pep talk. I mean, I do, but that's not my primary job. That's not why I went to school. That's not why I have student loans. It's not just about motivation. It's also not about therapy. We do sessions, mm-hmm. but we also in sports psych kind of are anti the couch. I actually think
love it.
I've probably met with somebody once on a couch and maybe mm-hmm. two or three times when I sit across from them, but usually we're outside walking. We go for a run together. We just kick the soccer ball around on the pitch, or we shoot free throws, or we just do something where they're relaxed. I can get them to open up and be honest and free and kind of out of the team setting. Or if I'm working with a team, I'm trying to get them to have fun, to talk, to interact with me. So it's basically the anti-therapy. We still work on things. Huh. But I can't diagnose you. It's not about mental illness. I mean, we research those things mm-hmm. and how they occur in sport and how would you say it? Like occurrence in the athletic population, uh-huh. I guess. But we are the anti-therapy for athletes, let's say. It's also not hypnosis. More often than not, I get, is it hypnosis? Because we do a lot of breathing drills and whatnot. It's like, do you see a stopwatch like waving back and forth? Like,
wow.
So it's none of those things.
No.
But what is sports psychology? So essentially, we got a lot of branches. We could go the mental health direction, where we talk a lot about mm-hmm. You know, it could be sport or it could be fitness. It could be about behavior change, how we get people to enjoy exercise, how we change behavior. You know, when you go to the doctor and they say, you're sick, you need to start exercising, or exercise would be really good for you, or you need to start eating better, how we motivate people, but make it basically become their own motivation instead of we're motivating you by scaring you. That's mm-hmm. a form of sports psychology. How to deal with stress is a lot of what I deal with. That's what my research is on. Brain-body connection, how the brain basically controls everything about life, including movement. We also have things like decision-making processes. That's a part of sports psychology. Cognitive speed. When you're at a game and you have to decide to go left or right, or what you think that player is going to do in this moment, or how the ball is going to land, those are all cognitive processes that we never even think mm-hmm. about. So my job is really to optimize those. And then in the team setting, things like teamwork, how the coach communicates, how we communicate with each other, how a coach coaches, coaching style, leadership style.
So many
sometimes
things.
It's just me sitting in the middle of two, three people duking out an argument and me trying to make sure people don't get hurt. You know,
yeah.
We work in a variety of settings, whether it's academic or practical or, yeah, it's great.
So what does a typical day look like for you then?
If there's a typical day, I wake up, get in a really stinky train now that it's summertime, because we love our public transportation here. I get to the university, usually by bike or by train. I'm there carrying out my research. I'm either in the lab or in class. I might be teaching on an off day, and then I go coach athletes in the midday, and then in the evenings, I'll work out, maybe coach some more athletes. And then I have appointments because we do a lot of online or remote consulting, have a lot of remote athletes or remote sports psychology clients, or then I'll hop on a call with somebody like you at midnight and
exactly,
and just have a go. So no day looks exactly alike, but usually about 3 days a week at the university, but always doing some kind of research, some kind of coaching, having a good time, et cetera.
When you say research, what does that mean? And what are you doing?
So my expertise, I guess, is I'm a stress and coping expert. So I'm a psychophysiologist, if we want to get really specific. There it is.
I love it.
It doesn't mean that I'm psycho and into physiology. It means I am studying basically the mind-body connection. So I study basically how we receive signals that first go through our brain. So we have basically two ways of deciding to do something in all of our things in life: breathing, moving, speaking, having stress, experiencing hormone release, etc. It can be either our brain starts it, or we receive a signal, our brain interprets it, and then it sends it onto our body. So either way, the brain is like the mediator for everything we receive if it's not the starting point. So I basically study how that happens with stress situations in athletic performance, particularly with soccer players, and how that impacts things like or basically how our perception of stress impacts things like our speed, our accuracy, our heart rate variability, or basically our cardiac and breathing response. I guess most of your audience is physical therapists, though, so you all know what the parasympathetic nervous system and whatnot is. So we basically monitor sympathetic versus parasympathetic activity based on perceptions of stress, and then perceptions of coping as well, and what coping skills for athletes are used, and whether or not that actually changes our physiology, or whether, you know, basically it's a placebo effect and we just feel like it works, but we're still stressed.
Gotcha.
Things of that nature.
And the stressful situations, is this talking about just like stress in life? I have a test coming up. There's a big game coming up. I have to make a decision within this game. What is the stress? What are the stressors?
For our study particularly, or just stress period?
Yeah,
stress
for your studying.
So because I work with mostly with soccer players, a lot of the stress that we look at as far as decision making, psychophysio, is in game scenarios or pre competition anxiety. My favorite personally is I just like to stress people out for fun. Is the running joke in our laboratory is we put them essentially in a laboratory setting. Where they have to shoot, essentially do penalty kicking in this gigantic room. I don't even think you have it in the States, but it's a gigantic room, and it's basically filled with boxes, and it shoots out this ball from the wall, and then you have to kick the ball basically within a second into the box that lights up.
Oh my gosh.
So it's really stressful, you can imagine. Yeah. And as it gets faster.
I just got stressed out thinking about that.
Yeah, totally. Right? You're throwing back to my Georgetown days, which, by the way, boo, Georgetown.
Listen.
And NYU, since they took all your money. But
Exactly. That's boo the NYU, yes. Exactly.
Dang. And so I can like speed up the time so that it's really fast, so that it's almost impossible to do. Or I can play music tracks over it. I can play crowd noise over them. I can play things. I hate this one, but I can play tracks where it's like them speaking negatively to themselves, basically. Do a light show, so it's like a strobe light in there and they're about to have a seizure while they're kicking the ball, like basically giving them psychological and physiological, so like physical and mental stressors and environmental stressors, to see how they respond, like whether they
stress
more, or if their accuracy goes down, if their speed and reaction time goes down, if their HRV goes up or down, basically if their parasympathetic nervous system turns completely off and their sympathetic is really highly activated, blah, blah, blah. So,
What do you say? How far along are you with this? Can you like tell us what we're seeing in terms of trending? Like, are you seeing things that you expect, or?
Oh yeah, I'm good at stressing people out.
And they just freak out, they fall apart. You have like certain athletes will do better, or
some people respond to psychological stress better than physiological stress, and some people respond to physiological stress better than psychological. Some people rarely don't have a problem with either one, and some are seem to. I'm not that far. Seem to confuse them both and basically respond equally negatively to them both, which is quite interesting.
And have you been able to correlate this with like I don't want to say the skill of the player, but like, okay, the people that we know, like, they don't crush, they don't crumble under pressure. They're testing like you would expect, or?
Well, right now I'm only using an expert sample. They have a really high training age anyway. They're essentially elites. So I can't say that quite yet, but we certainly think that any novice athlete is going to crack, because essentially elite athletes are used to and thrive under pressure, which is the concept of mental toughness that gets twirled and thrown around ruthlessly.
I'd be really interested to see with that novice population, if like the trends that come out of that, and if it's like, then you follow them across time and it's like, oh, these players actually ended up developing and like going farther because they could deal with more shit.
Well, in my specific study, we don't have that dichotomy yet. We just haven't looked at it, but we do know that they have different coping mechanisms, as in expert players tend to use coping mechanisms where they can exert more control over the situation, in the sense of like, they'll only handle what they can control and let go of what they can't. Like, this mistake doesn't bother me anymore because I can't change it, so now I've let it go. Whereas a novice athlete is going to be much more concerned with having made that mistake and trying to overcompensate later, for example.
Holy smokes. And then I got to ask, you follow up with these people and you help them develop better coping strategies? Are you purely research, or are you interventional also? Because you said you coach, so.
Yeah, I'm also practical. So basically, as soon as we.
You just stress them out and then you're like, peace.
Like, later days, thanks so much for contributing. Good luck out there. So the plan is to develop an intervention basically to teach coping skills. And essentially what I teach, what my specific thing is how to perceive stress differently. Because again, the brain is the buffer between.
Yeah,
the perception and the output. That's basically where the decision is met to either, yes, stress is positive, or yes, stress is negative, or no, it's neutral. Well, when it comes in, it's entirely neutral. So there's two things to look at, basically. We can change the perception of how we perceive it. Again, if you're not in control of it, then it doesn't really matter. And if you have nothing to lose, it also doesn't really matter. So don't freak out about either of those things. But then to also accept it as a challenge, which acceptance is a really big topic in expert and novice dichotomy as well. And also the mindfulness component, to stay in the moment with it, even if it is a negative stress, like even if you did make that mistake, to not basically dissociate from it and either overthink it or leave the moment and you're no longer present, things of that nature. So yeah, that is quite interesting.
This is fascinating for me. Like, I'm seeing, just as you're kind of saying that, I'm thinking back to just pain science, and you know, that's a real big hot ticket item right now. And I had a podcast episode that I did not too long ago, solo one, where I was talking about the Invisibilia episode from NPR, and they did, like, they're treating that girl that had, you know, central sensitization, really, would sound like she had, but. Exactly what you just said is how they treated her, where it wasn't like they put her in this situation. If you guys are listening, I'll link the episode, but what they had this young girl, she's like 14 years old, chronic pain, just where this is the type of pain that becomes central sensitization, so that nervous system is hugely upregulated. Everything hurts. The wind blows, it hurts her. The pain is spreading. It started in her leg. It's like all over her whole body now. And she, you know, basically has this last resort. She goes to this doctor. And it's a type of exposure therapy of sorts, a graded exposure model, where they basically put the participants through physical activity, right? They're not like beating them or anything. They're just putting them through physical activity that they know is going to, you know, contribute to this pain experience, but it's not actually causing any tissue damage or anything like that. And one of the central tenets that they don't talk about until the very end of this episode, but one of the things that's so important is that the person, they ask the participant, you know, for their feeling, for the emotion that this experience elicits. And they want that person to sit with it. It's not about going through this, having this pain, enduring it, and then like dissociating from it. It's like, I have to sit with this and kind of figure this out and be with it in the moment. And then when you said that just now, I'm like, holy shit, that's exactly what you're just saying. That's why what we're talking about there, that kind of method of treating this chronic pain works.
Yeah, and interestingly, we know that... that like semi-professional, so recreational to semi-professional athletes will use the dissociative technique of basically mm-hmm. pulling back and pulling out of it. And you know mm-hmm. what dissociation feels like. It's like focus. It can be focusing on something else, or it can be feeling like I'm coming out of my body. I'm no longer present and I'm kind of watching mm-hmm. it happen. That's in its extreme form. But associative is what elite athletes or expert athletes, expert performers are more likely to use as far as from what we can tell in our literature. Where even if they experience pain, for example, been working with a triathlete recently who he experiences immense pain in his shin just because they run so darn long. Mm-hmm, uh-huh. And that's normal. And basically he gets into his head, and his practice that he uses automatically before he ever even came to me is I can feel my calf tightening up, but I also feel my foot moving. My foot's hitting the ground. I'm cycling my leg, my knee's coming up, mm-hmm. and basically walks him through the whole cycle of what his body is doing so that he mm-hmm. stays completely in that, even though it hurts.
Present.
Yeah. But he's in it.
Wow.
But if you don't accept it, that's a different story. I mean, if you basically tell your pain, it's not. I mean, it might sound a little woo-woo, and I don't know what your audience is like, but if you accept, essentially can't accept your pain and require it to be foreign to you, you're going to have a really hard time with basically associating with it, accepting it, becoming a part of it, and then letting it. Yeah, I mean, your body's really great at healing itself, so.
Yeah, totally. No, the audience is picking up what you're putting down 100%. I guarantee it. Like, I guarantee it. I'm sitting here, I'm like writing things down furiously because this is like really, really, really good shit.
Or it could actually be that I'm not making sense. So, you know, either way.
No, the last part, I was like, I got to sit here as she's saying it because I'm like, yes, that it makes total sense. Can you actually talk to them, speaking of pain and injury, can you talk to them about them and me, your story and how you got into this?
Girl. Okay. Pearls were clutched. Okay.
I love
so,
it.
So yeah, I conned my way into college soccer, let's say.
Works.
I worked the system across oceans to get things done where they needed to get done. And I was never the most talented soccer player, but my whole heart was in it. And I was basically bought into, I'm going to take this as long as I can and as far as it'll take me, because it's essentially my only way out. If you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. So it got me out. I got to college, was hype big times, tore mm-hmm. my meniscus, tore up my knee, really bad patella issues that we were never able to solve, overuse injuries, turns out, that we were never able to solve, a whole host of ankle, hip, back issues, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I had to have knee surgery. Had the operation, received 5 weeks, 5 total visits of PT afterwards.
You were fixed? What?
What? Got reassessed and they were like, well, by our watch, you should be able to be back in training by now. So not really sure what happened. I was like, dog, I can't go up the stairs. let alone going down. Like there's no, this thing still clicks. It's still locked. Like we're a mess over here. And so basically I felt like, I mean, I could redshirt. Who wants mm-hmm. to redshirt? American college is expensive, and I figured that I needed to go ahead and put my whole heart into that. So I did the opposite and said, I'm getting the hell out of sport. Yeah. See you guys later. Good luck over there. tried to deuce out, and we see how well that turned out. Basically, I was in so much pain and had never really paid attention to how we trained in the gym, yeah. which, whoops, I think most college athletes have no idea how we actually train.
No.
We never thought
just
to
go
ask.
And do it.
Right, exactly. You just do the workout like, on the board.
Just go and do it.
Whatever the coach says or the intern. So I basically had to figure out, how do I train myself? How do I get myself motivated? How do I not basically fall apart, because I stopped training completely and then was even in more pain, because obviously terrible idea right after being uh-huh. an athlete, having knee surgery, and then stopping training completely is a bad idea. And essentially started studying sports science and psychology, realized that how much the mental game is behind recovery and then performance and retirement as well, which is a whole nother story. And then became a strength and conditioning coach. Wanted to train myself like an athlete, and then realized I just really liked training athletes and working with athletes, and then became a return to play specialist by the time it was all said and done. So essentially I live by the motto my bachelor thesis supervisor said in one of my first meetings with her. She was like, "Julia, I don't know what you're going to study, but all I know is we study what we are. So you'll figure it out eventually. Don't take it too hard." And what do you know?
Damn.
We made it all the way out here.
Wow. Say that one more time, Julia.
She said, "Julia, don't worry about it so much. We study what we are, so I know you'll figure it out."
You guys listening, that's huge. I have a very varied audience from what I can tell, and the people that post stuff, like the people that post that they're actually listening. And it's not just physical therapists. I have a lot of massage therapists, a lot of just basically in the, you know, health, the movement sector. But I have a lot of students that listen also. And I know that they're all freaking out and worried about what they're going to do and finding a niche and so many things that we all worry about. And so that's some hugely, hugely valuable information there.
It makes sense though, wow. Because now obviously in the business world, everybody's like, find the problem, find the pain point and solve it, right? And we talk about that as well in strength and conditioning and return to play. And obviously you guys in PT and obviously in sports psychology, we're always looking for where the issue is so we don't make a new one, which obviously doesn't help anybody. We got to fill the gaps that are already there. That's essentially what that whole phrase of be who you needed when you were younger comes from.
Yeah.
And also, you know, this one, you study what you are because you had a gap, you know it personally and intimately, and you with that experience know how to fill it. So if your passion is in that place and you can get enough, I mean, I get so much fulfillment out of what I do every day that to me, it doesn't just feel like serving my old self. It feels like, I feel like I'm giving back to generation essentially 4 of women's soccer and giving them all of filling all the gaps for them that were completely empty for me when I was as generation 3 was playing.
Damn. Julia is dropping a ton of free business information and coaching right now. So you should be writing this down with that little rewind button and go back because that is so freaking spot on. I actually want to tease it out some more, Julia, because you have your own business, White Line Performance. Can you tell us about that and your remote athletes? Like, give me the spiel, man. This is awesome shit.
All right. So full disclosure, I always have to tell the story because it's kind of ridiculous. I'm assuming most of your listeners are Americans, or at least I hope so, but everybody will get this joke. So I founded the company in the summer of 2016, and I founded it, was super hyped about it, sent it around to my cousin who's in business. He's in Silicon Valley. Sends me a message back that night. He was like, "Dog, in this political environment, you want to name your company White Lion Performance, you asshole." We like, it's been the ongoing family joke since then that like Julia is so out of touch and stuck in business.
It works.
I was like, I got the blinders on. Somebody's got to make the coinage in this house.
Exactly. Exactly. It's fine.
So white lions basically are genetic mutants of the typical yellow or orange lion. Which is, by the way, not Beyonce. Mm-hmm. I just had to throw a Beyonce joke in there, but The Lion King's coming this summer. Have them post ads on your podcast. Monetize. Okay, thanks. So they're basically albino lions. They're literally genetic mutants. And for me, it was thinking about, you know, collegiate athletes were like, I think it's 3.5% of the athletic population make it to college now. And then like a very small percent of collegiate athletes make it onto the elite level. And I love working with high performers. I always do. I love performance testing. I love data. I love optimizing. My biggest question is how do we optimize performance, period? So physical, mental, everything that goes into that, spiritual, emotional, environmental, how do we optimize everything to optimize performance? And so basically that 1% genetic mutant lion just really stuck. So that's kind of our thing. So White Lion is essentially remote coaching and consulting. So we do strength and conditioning, we do return to play programming, we write custom programs for athletes, teams, federations. We also consult and coach for federations. We do coaching education, do coach mentorship. We also do sports psychology, like workshops, one-to-ones via technology, online or in person, et cetera, et cetera. So we got the whole...
Dang.
We got the whole gambit.
I think like the list of things you don't do is shorter than the things that you do.
Like, cool girl, I don't do physical therapy. You can have that.
I mean, you do strength and conditioning, so like it's basically the same thing. Like, let's call a spade a spade.
Close.
Damn. So how did this get started? Like, I want to kind of tease at the business side of here, because you guys listening, you know Roger Bannister Effect, that is my jam. When you see it done, suddenly it becomes that much easier and that much more attainable for you. So for the listeners, like, how in the hell did you start this? Like, you have remote clients. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to make this business and okay, suddenly I have people. And maybe that was the case for you, but a lot of times it's not. How did this thing get rolling? And what does it look like?
I think it started out like most of us did, which was in a brick and mortar building. So after I worked in the collegiate setting, it was time to deuce out ASAP. Love the NCAA athletes, not the organization. And so I moved on to private sector, became a strength and conditioning coach and eventually assistant athletic director of our facility. And I was in charge of basically strength and conditioning there. And so through that time, basically, you know, being able to work with coaches, help coaches, and then have my pick essentially of the athletes I wanted to work with beyond specific projects. And that was really, really fun for me. I loved doing the background like data performance analytics. That's where I basically fell in love with data again after, you know, you get a little disenchanted after writing that many theses and papers and whatnot. And just really loved the being able to look from the massive macro and into the deep micro of what optimizes performance. And I was able to do that in that job. So then I just started networking. That's like, I don't know anything about business. I don't know anything about bookkeeping. I don't know anything about taxes. I don't know anything about international law or business law. I don't know none of that shit. But what I know is that you know somebody who knows somebody who can help you. So I just started talking
to
people.
Good.
And it started in the gym where when I was on lunch break or on one of my 15-minute breaks, I would just get up, go around and talk to people. I mean, I wasn't selling it to my own athletes. Obviously, I wasn't selling it to their parents. They had already bought into it. I would just go around and talk to people and basically try and improve our culture in the facility, boost up my coaches, check on everybody, clean up if I needed to, and then just talk to the new people that I hadn't met before. And I would never come to them and like pitch them my shit. Like, it wasn't that important to me. Everybody loves money, but it wasn't so important to me that I needed to push somebody away in the first 5 minutes. So I would just...
Yeah.
Everybody loves to talk about themselves, quite honestly. So I just ask them about them.
And the psychology is coming out.
Yep. And just let them talk about themselves. And they would. And eventually we find something in common. And then we could always bring it back around. Or maybe we didn't. Maybe it was a short conversation. But very often in the first 5 to 10 minutes of a conversation with somebody, I could tell if there was a connection and opportunity to have another one. And I wouldn't go in that conversation into like a 2-hour, let's go get coffee and I want to meet your whole network thing. It was just like, all right, well, when are you coming back? Friday? All right, I'll see you Friday. And then have another conversation on Friday. And then the next week, bring back a coffee when they are lifting in the back or whatever, whatever. So anyway, long story short, after doing that for about a year, I met somebody who was working with the military around Washington, D.C. area. And he had a lot of connections in the sports world and the military world because he was a consultant in their strength and conditioning, basically one of the bases in Virginia. I got connected to him. He introduced me to some of his network. And through his network, I met basically the people I needed to meet found the business or start the business, incorporate the business, and then to find my first round of clients, to get some notoriety, to get, you know, a little bit of capital going, et cetera. It was just literally the right people. And through meeting 100 people, I met one person who then introduced me to 10 people. And those were exactly the people I needed to know to get White Lion off the ground. So
what a message. And did you know from the jump, you were like, yo, I want to work for myself. Like, I'm not trying to be in someone else's, a cog in someone else's wheel, or what was that?
You know, what's funny is I'm actually looking for other jobs in clubs for next season because I really love the mix of the 50-50 or the 70-30 or whatever. Like, it's so fun to have control over some things and be able to do whatever you want and have phases where maybe you work a little bit more on that side. But I also love the consistency of being able to travel with a team and invest in a team and work basically from one place and always have access to the same stuff. Like, to me, there's nothing like being able to work live with the same athletes across time.
That is so good. I love it. You guys listening, like, create your freaking happiness. She's out there. She's telling you, like, this is, go and do it. You can create the life you want, make it look how you want, start your business, still work for somebody else, do a little bit of both, figure out what your passion is, what your happiness is, and, you know, throw yourself into that. How's it been being, if, you know, so you guys listening, I met Julia, and by met, I'm doing air quotes over here. We never actually met, right? Because she in Germany. But met her through the Instagram. And actually, I thought that she was Leslie's sister. I thought Dee had two accounts. And I was like, oh, this is Dee on multiple accounts here. So I will also link that episode, you guys. That was, I brought on Leslie Trujillo for the book that she dropped. That was just phenomenal. And actually, that's how Julia knows Leslie and Dee also, is through the Dear Her Project, right?
Yep. Well, it was originally the Combos with Coaches podcast. Exactly.
There,
but
yeah.
If you haven't brought Dear Her yet, you're seriously missing out, because there's some female athlete or female who works hard in your life who could use to read that. So
it is. You know what? I'm going to actually link that in the show notes also. The book is amazing. Link in the episode so you can go listen to that. But just everything that Julia has just said and everything that's in the book, like, it's, you got someone in your life, and maybe it's you, that can benefit from what's in that book. So definitely, definitely check that out. But where was I even going with this? Met her on the Instagram. So it was our backstory there. Fuck, I forgot where I was even going with that.
Yeah, you thought I was Dee's second account because Dee is the ultimate troll. But turns out I actually met Dee from trolling Leslie on Instagram. So we basically teamed together to troll Leslie on Instagram and Facebook. And I have two Instagram accounts, and so she decided to respect me because I not only know how to troll, but also have an amazing gift game. So
I was like, damn, it's not Dee. Ah, that's where I was going with it. It's not Dee. But I had met her, you know, through social media and Leslie, basically. And one of the discussions that we had in the past was being a female in the strength and conditioning world. How has that been for you?
That's such a loaded question. I get that every single podcast. I never figured out how to answer it. Like,
I mean, you call a spade a spade. It's been terrible. Has it been fine? Like, for some people, doesn't bother them. Like, they've gone and everything's been okay. Like,
I am very much who I am in a non-performative sense. So I make a really big deal about being like caring and authentic with my athletes. That's really important to me. And that has been really great for me in some cases and really bad in other cases. That's just who I am. And I don't know if that's just because I'm a psychologist or if it's a female emotional thing or I'm a nurturer or blah, blah, blah. Like, I genuinely come into my teams and I love my athletes. Like, I would give them the shirt off my back, essentially. You need something extra and you can't pay for it, but you've already done this, that, and the other thing. Sure, I'll meet you at 10 o'clock at night to check this thing out in your arm or you pulled your hamstring or whatever. Like, you know, you need some emergency intervention stuff, give me a call. Like, I would do anything for them and I love them very much. That's also gotten me in trouble because I tend to miss things sometimes because I get so wrapped up in that, such as, I might be very oblivious when I'm working with a group of men and there's one or two of them that are a little bit creepier than other ones, but have a really nice way of doing it. I wrote an article actually a couple weeks ago called Don't Hit on Your Female Strength Coach, period, on my blog. It got like 3,000 clicks inside of an hour. Damn. I guess everybody agrees with me on that one.
Getting posted. All right, good. Check that out. Shit.
That's actually really not entirely sure, but I've had quite a few issues with that. And I think that's really, I think it's a respect issue. I command respect as somebody who's an expert in my field, but I also accept the fact that I'm young. Like, you're never going to be an expert when you're in your mid 20s, like, as much as we like to say it. And so there's only so much respect that I demand. And I think maybe I need to start commanding more of it, a little bit more professional respect. Maybe being a little bit less attached, but I haven't found that balance quite yet. It's better than it was, but for me, being a female strength coach has been a balancing act because I genuinely am so passionate about what I do, but I tend to overinvest, and sometimes that blinds me and gets me in trouble.
Gotcha. That's some real talk. Totally, man. That's some real talk. That's things that people need to hear. And like, I'm sure that people listening to this, they can totally relate to that. So thank you for sharing that, because that's, I'm not in that position, so I can't be, you know, surmising this. So thank you for sharing that. That's
I'd also like to say, if you have a second, I would go back to the business stuff.
Talk.
Is I think social media gives us this concept that people are doing really well, like other coaches that are just killing it out there and are crushing it and raking in the dough. And oh my God, your Instagram content is always punctual and it just rocks and you must be hitting six figures in the bank every month. And I just want to dispel the fact, the myth that's the truth, because it's absolutely not.
It's absolutely not.
It's actually really hard out here. It's easy to put up a front on social media. It's also really easy to market on social media. And that's, you know, so Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, they're great places to market. I know you've done a lot about ads and whatnot on and marketing, but we're not all crushing it out here. So be nice to everybody and don't be super envious or try and piggyback off of people who are also just trying to get by, which is most of us. So don't be fooled. Social media is super easy to use. But most of it's just marketing. Most of us just know when and how to post the right picture. It doesn't mean we're crushing it in a Lamborghini right now.
I mean, I feel like people that are not on Instagram.
Hello?
They got better. They got better shit to do. They're not on like this kind of Instagram. If they are, they're like fucking, their account is just totally different. Like, they ain't fucking doing this.
So. Oh my God, I had some trouble the other day who was like, "Why do you always do your videos barefoot?" I was like, "Because I need new Nikes so bad and I can't afford them, but I only wear Nikes, so I'm not humble enough to just buy New Balance or like whatever $60 on the sale rack. But I'm also too poor to buy $130 Nike Metcons. So you can also monetize that, Nike. Thank you.
I love it. For sponsoring our podcast. I love it. I love it. Before I let you go, homie, I have a few more questions. This was one in particular. Your thesis around shame and guilt, your fondness for Brené Brown, your just inherent attachment style and just how you are, how has that played into everything? How, what are you, I don't want to say what are you finding, but you said that when you were looking at shame and guilt and using it as a predictor, can you just share some of that side of psychology with us in terms of how it relates to performance?
That's also a loaded question.
Yes.
Yeah, so let me tell you what I did in the study, I guess, first, and then you can ask that again.
Cool.
Okay, so basically we looked at the dichotomy of being able to sort athletes between shame-prone. So basically, shame-prone and guilt-prone. So basically, if you're guilt-prone, if you don't know Brené Brown's research or any of the shame and guilt dichotomy research, guilt-proneness is essentially, I did something bad, I need to apologize for it, and then it's over with. Essentially, it's an outward, you basically take care of the issue outwardly. I did something bad. My behavior was bad. Now let me go fix it with better behavior. Shame essentially is I'm bad. I and myself am bad. I've withdrawn into myself. And the only way to fix it is for me, essentially, in the most extreme form, is to not exist anymore. Because I am bad. Not the behavior. I am bad. And you can't compensate for basically the feeling that you are bad. So we basically used that dichotomy to see if we could predict athletic performance and whether or not athletes would choke under pressure. It's called when you have a severe performance drop where you're essentially, you can do this in training. Let's say it's penalty kicks. You can shoot penalties like it's nobody's business in training. You can do it in normal game scenarios, but it comes to the World Cup final and you blew that bitch right over the crossbar. That's choking under pressure. So we essentially wanted to see if shame and guilt could predict that. Turns out it can. Shame-prone athletes are more likely to have a lower performance under extreme stress, more likely to choke, more likely to have a higher fear of failure, higher rates of perfectionism, lower sport-specific self-efficacy, and higher performance anxiety than guilt-prone athletes, who again tend to say that behavior was bad or that shot was bad, on to the next. They don't waste time overcompensating on it or going into their brain, which, by the way, if you activate the prefrontal lobe by overthinking your mistakes or spending too much time thinking on it or, again, dissociate from it, if you activate that prefrontal lobe, your brain essentially shuts off its automation, which your brain knows your skills. So if you're playing sports or you're doing, I don't know, probably even when you're in PT sessions, you're probably not overthinking it too much. You're just in your flow. You know what you're doing. You've been automated to do this. But as soon as you start overthinking it and that prefrontal cortex in your brain gets activated, it shuts off that automation. You begin to overthink and essentially overcompensate, trying to like teach your brain and body that skill again. And that's when you mess up.
Dude, you just said some total fire there. And actually, I'm going to not disagree with you in a bad way, but in PT, and this is one of my biggest fucking pet peeves that I see, we don't let people get into flow state. And that's the problem. There's way, 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 way too much overcoaching and overcueing and then overthinking, subsequent overthinking. And then people are like, well, why can't I do this? Like, yeah, we have to have some parameters because we're trying to like teach them a skill and things like that. But, you know, therapists out there listening to this or movement professionals out there, this is the value of using things like reactive neuromuscular training and things that basically set this person up to succeed with as little coaching and cueing as possible. This is one of the reasons that I harp on this extensively in my course that I teach, really taking things back in terms of developmental stages and getting people into positions where like they kind of have to succeed, and then it becomes, you know, reflexive, second nature, because they're not sitting there activating prefrontal cortex and like thinking, is this in the right spot? Is this in the right? And then my foot has to go like this because everything else freaking shuts down. That is huge, lady. You are just like, poof, my brain blowing up over here. That's so, so huge. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question, and then I'll leave you alone because it's getting really late.
No, let's go for it. Go off.
This is good. Like, so good. If you could provide the listeners, and mind you, it's, you know, movement professionals. So we got PTs, you got chiros, you got massage therapists, you got trainers, a bunch of different people, students. If you could provide them with, like, you know, 1, 2, 3 tangible things to help optimize athletic performance, what would it be?
Can it be anything, like physical or mental?
Anything. Yeah, anything. Because, I mean, this is what you do, so anything.
Oh, now the psychologist is really going to sit on the couch.
I love it. This is great. This is a fun conversation.
I genuinely think that the best thing we can do for athletes is encourage their passion behind what they do. And I think that goes across the board for any high performance person in business, in work, and just in their jobs, in sport, in music. It doesn't matter. First, this is not an easy world. Okay. It's going to be hard to get through that rigorous training, all that rigorous shit. You know, Brene Brown always says, if you go into the arena, you got to expect to get your ass kicked, because no, somebody at some point is going to be disappointed with you, your life, your work. That was Oprah. credit where it's due. The next one's from Beyonce. We're coming up, okay? We have to encourage the passion behind it, because that just makes it so much easier to get through at the end of the day.
So good.
I guess something that I would give you guys is PTs, kind of a mental trick that we use, and I'm sure you've heard of this 1,000 times, but as far as when we're trying to get athletes to shift that mindset from I'm a healthy athlete to I'm an injured athlete, is so essentially, again, it's that control switch of, you know, the expert players. It's to essentially say the thing that I can control is to shift my focus from my job being to perform on the pitch to performing in PT. My job now is 100% as an athlete and a member of my team is to focus on getting better. And when they really take their focus off of I'm missing out on the pitch, which they can't control, to I can control putting 100% of my effort and focus into my recovery while staying integrated with their team, while having a support system. And if the PT needs to, you can be their support system. That's okay. They don't have to have their coach checking on them every day. They don't have to have a ton of friends. Sometimes the PT is the support system. I know mine was for me. And then the strength coach after that, but to basically, again, shift that focus onto this is my current task. And then when I complete this task, 90% likely, if my entire focus is in it and I'm doing, you know, I'm carrying out everything that needs to be done, sleeping, eating, having social support, staying positive, being grateful, spending time outside, doing other things that I love, and not focusing on I'm missing out, even though I can't control that. More likely than not, not only is the journey going to be quicker and easier, they're more likely to come back and then reintegrate better with their team.
Oh my God. That is fucking gold. I'm not paying you, but that is fucking gold. That, oh my God, that is huge. So you guys listening, please go back. I wasn't even watching the clock on that, whatever, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, I don't know. Go back and listen to that again, because that's how you're going to help your patients. They may not be in the sports setting, which is totally fine, but this applies to everything. She gave you two really tangible things there, right? We want that person to focus on what they can control, and for you as the clinician to really support what they're passionate about, support things that are meaningful to this person. All too often in therapy, we have the person come in and you're like, this is one of the downsides of like a very biomedical approach where it's like, we're going to focus on like getting your shoulder mobility back. It doesn't fucking mean shit to them because they don't care about that. Instead of being like, we're going to focus on, can you, you know, getting you back to be able to lift your kid, whatever, something functional that they actually, that means something to them. And then that mindset or mind frame shift of, what can I control, and let me do everything in my power to meet the needs there. Like, you know, I think that when we look at athletes, one of the benefits there, if their job is to perform, then it's really nice that if they are injured, then their job becomes to, you know, get healthy and do everything in their power. When we have, you know, a desk worker and they have some sort of injury, something like that, it becomes, they still have that job, even then they also have this injury on top of it. But I think that that's huge in terms of providing them with this focus on what can you control, like missing time and not being able to play, not being able to do the things that are outside of your control right now, but you can be focusing on these things. That is, oh, you framed it so nicely. My brain is...
I have to say that my PT in 2012, I worked with him and I wound up doing... Yeah, 2011, 2012. So he rehabbed me, returned to sport me so that I theoretically could still play. And I have, for the record, no pain at all anymore.
So good. So good.
You know, I got like 12% of my knee left in there, some wild, right. Like that. But, you know,
good.
A girl can
you
still.
Have another one.
I don't think it's like kidneys, Shante. But
yeah, it is. Like I'm saying, you have another one, you're fine. You're totally fine.
That's why we do one-legged skips every training session. Okay.
You see? You're good.
I can sprint at max velocity. I do it 3 times a week. I have 3 high days. I can squat as much as I you know, ever used to. I still maintain my max. Like, he did a great job, but he changed my life because that was really – he did a couple things. He asked me a lot of questions. Like, he made me think for myself. So he didn't basically have me come in the office, get on the table, and then feed me bullshit, which I've had experiences with other PTs. And I am not saying that you all do that. I am saying that some people, like textbook personal trainers and textbook strength coaches, are textbook PTs and basically whip out the dictionary and say, well, you're in this box, so we'll be doing this, this, and this, instead of making me also think about it. And those questions made me feel so comfortable with him. He was my social support. And then he basically, through that, helped me reintegrate my brain with my body, which is when I get a ton of athletes coming to me after they've been injured, and then we're trying to return them to play, and then realize it's not actually a physical issue that they have holding them from returning them to play. It's mental. Again, pain science, where basically we need to tweak their perception of, this used to be the case, but your body's holding on to this trauma and your brain's holding on to this trauma. And basically saying, hey, what if this happens again? But the chance of it are happening again are very little because you passed all of our protocols. You can do this. You can do that. You're strong. You're stable. We basically need to change the image of how you see your foot or your knee or whatever the injury may be. And he asked me so many questions that it basically forced me to figure that out by myself without him saying it. And then afterwards, he was like, the body remembers everything and the brain remembers everything. And that's a great thing because we need all those maps in our brain to control our body and to help us make good decisions. And your body and your brain are always trying to save your life. So they will give you those stress and pain responses to say, We may be in danger. We may be in danger. You may need to run, girl. So just be prepared. And that's so good. And that's so healthy, but it's not appropriate for this moment. So I need you to ask your brain and body a question. Are you in immediate danger? Are you actually in pain? Or are you just realizing it? And if you're not in pain, then it's okay, because it's okay for the body to feel things. That doesn't mean it's in danger. So PTs have a really great role. I commend you guys, but you're also frontline sports psychologists when it comes to return to play. So I hope that you're asking your athletes questions and helping them reintegrate, because the mental piece is, again, what I have to deal with the most when it comes to returning to play, which is great. It just slows down the process a lot. If it can begin in PT, that would be amazing.
PTs, listen up. Get your shit together. It's very important.
You guys are amazing. You changed my life, so I will always be grateful.
This is huge. That dude was way ahead of the times, man.
He's
good on him. Shit. That guy's like, that's amazing.
That's why I will never shit on PTs, because no matter how many people I've met who, you know, do follow the textbook rule, there will always be people who stand apart and really literally change people's lives like mine. I mean, that changed my whole trajectory of my life. I would not be here if he hadn't made me be able to walk again.
This is like, you guys listening, this was said before, that we are in the best field. We have the best careers. We just got to figure out a way to not get so burned out so we can actually, you know, impact people and get to do what we love, right? And follow our passions.
But again, you are the frontline sports psychologist. So do me a favor and be really good to them and make them do their own work, and then send them over to me when you're done, so I can get out of the game.
Done. Exactly. We can then send them over there so she can get some new Nikes and we'll all be winning. Julie, before I let you go, any last words you want to leave the people with?
You guys need to practice what you preach too.
Love it.
I think we all do, whether you're a coach or in business or in PT or a psychologist. I'm talking to myself now. you know, we preach about rest and regeneration and healing and creativity and health. We literally work in those fields, and yet we treat ourselves like shit all of the time. Mm-hmm. Get your sleep, moisturize your skin, get out into the sun 20 minutes a day. And, you know, have your own social support. Make sure you're checking in with yourself and make sure you're feeling okay. And, you know, you'll study what you are. You're going to be okay. It's going to take time, but don't be afraid to ask people for help if you really need it. You know, my mentor, she had all the good quotes, man. She really needs a Pinterest. You know, study what you are. And then she also said, do the hard work and do as much research as you can, and then ask for help when you need it. So basically do the front end. And when you can't anymore, when you've worked as hard as you can, stalled out, then they get on somebody's list and reach out. People want to help and people want to give back. And no matter what, don't ever sell off your soul to anybody or anything, because it will never, ever, ever be worth it. So that would be the last bit. Take care of yourself.
All the things. Practice what you preach. Do the work. Ask when you need. Put it in. I love it, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. Homie, thank you for taking the time. What time is it there? 1?
Quarter till. Close.
Damn.
It's all right. I still got 30 minutes because homecoming, I only have 30 minutes left. So.
Shit. Damn. Thank you for taking the time in the middle of the night to share your brain with us. This was huge. If people want to follow you, contact you, you know, send you some donations for shoes, how can they do that?
Okay, my PayPal email is no. my handle on Instagram is at White Lion Performance, like the Lion King, which comes out in July. Beyonce will be in it. She's singing the circle of life, so I won't be alive after July, but until July, you can contact me there. And then on Facebook as well, White Lion Performance. Twitter, you can find me at the Julia Lion. LinkedIn as well. And my email address is julia@whitelionperformance.com. Email address, whitelionperformance.com. If you like free stuff, there's lots of free on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and my website. I'm all about that download life. Got some psych resources on there. Got some training resources for you on there. I like to blog because I like to read myself talking, apparently, which makes no sense. If you like this really strange accent I have going on, I post a lot of really informative stories on my Instagram about all things. I'm super interactive, so go get some. And thank you guys so much for listening. And Shantae, thank you so much for putting up with me for the last hour. I could not be more thankful for you and what you put out into the universe. So
thank you, homie. This is fucking awesome. You guys listening, all of that, I drop it in the show notes. So don't worry. Don't crash your car trying to write all that stuff down. But definitely give her a follow. Yes, doing the same on my end. And
don't crash your car.
Thank you.
I need that money for my Nikes.
Exactly. Nikes, man. PayPal. Come on. You guys, Julia, thank you again for taking the time, man. This is like the middle of the night. So truly, this was straight gold. I can't, honestly, I can't say thank you enough. So
thank you, family. I think sometime we should do a 2.0 where I do sports psychology on you.
Dude, I'm down. I think the audience would love that too. So down.
We'll do a live session and give your PT buddies and our family out there some love and some actual strategies to use.
Yes, that's going to happen. I love that, actually.
Or we can do it live on video. Someday we'll be
in LA. On video. I was like, this is in video. That's going to be amazing. You guys listening, hold this to it. That's going to happen either in person or in video. One or the other. That's awesome. Awesome. Thank you, homie. Thank you. You guys listening, thank you. I know you could have been doing anything and you chose to listen to us. And for that, we are endlessly, endlessly, endlessly grateful.
Thankful.
If you enjoyed... I love it. If you enjoyed the episode, please give it a few likes, a few stars, 5 preferably. If you loved it, subscribe. It does help people to find the podcast.
Girls,
all right.
If you haven't already given it 5 stars and commented and subscribed and all of that good shit, what the fuck are you doing with your life?
That's psychology right there.
Hello?
I love it. All right, officially signing out this time. Until next time, friends, Julia and Maestro, out.